Okay, good morning. Good morning. Okay. I think at the beginning I wasn't very clear enough. Yeah, I'm possibly much clearer enough now. All right. Okay, good. So, okay. All right, where we were. Where were we? We are on this day in Africa, and we were starting right. Let's go back to 1598. Where am I now? Okay. So in the land that we now called, Angola, a woman stepped into power. Her name was Queen Zinga Bande, and she takes the throne of the Mataba, the Mataba kingdom. And honestly, Africa would never be the same. So this was no ordinary queen. This was not an ordinary queen. She went on becoming one of the fiercest resistant leader at this continent have ever seen, standing toe to toe against Portuguese colonial forces who were pushing into Central Africa at that time. So she outsmarted them. She outsmarted them in diplomacy. She outmaneuvered them, you know, on the battlefield. And she refuses to let her people be swallowed by the empire. Now, if you don't know her story, look her up, really. Look it up. Because Queen Zinga is exactly the kind of history we should be celebrating loud and proud. So now, fast forward to 1964, Kenya has just won its independence from British colonial rule, and the man carrying the hope of the new nation stepped forward, Jomo Kenyatta. On this day, on the 13th of April, Kenyatta officially takes office as a prime minister of independent Kenya. This wasn't just a political ceremony. This was East Africa saying loud and clear, we are governing ourselves now. So Kenyatta went on to become the founding father of modern Kenya. And April the 13th marks the very key moment in that journey. Freedom and people. And that's what this day represents. But not every story of this day is celebration. It's a celebration. 1975, we moved to Chad. The news is dark. You know, Francois Tobalbaye, the first president of Chad, is overthrown and killed in a military coup. Tobalbaye had ruled the country since independence. So his presidency was marked by growing unrest and authoritarian rule. Now, his violence removal didn't bring stability either. So it opened the door to decades of conflict and instability that would actually grip Chad for many years. It's a sobering reminder that the road after colonialism was for many nations as well anything but, you know, but smooth. Now we head south to South Africa, 1985, the town of Kwanobutle, the town of Kwanobutle gathers for a mass funeral, and it is heartbreaking. You know, thousands of people came together to bury anti-apartheid protesters who had been gunned down by police. These protesters were killed during commemoration of the Safile massacre, an event from 1960 where police opened fire on a peaceful crowd. So here we are, 25 years later, that the violence continues. So that funeral became a powerful symbol of everything that was wrong with apartheid, and a moment that galvanized even more people actually to join the fight for freedom. In 1992, and the world is watching South Africa again, but this time it is personal. Nelson Mandela, by now a global icon for anti-apartheid struggle, publicly announced that he and Winnie Mandela are separating. Actually, not separating, divorcing. Now, let me be clear. This was a private matter between two people, a marriage that had endured, you know, their marriage really endured decades of separation, prison, exile, and unimaginable pressure. So, but because of who they were, you know, because of what they represented, the announcement actually became, you know, the announcement sent a shockwave around the world. You know, it was deeply human moment in the middle of political revolution. And it reminded everyone that behind the legends, there were real people. There were real people carrying real pain. So, yeah. And finally, we learned on 1996, Cyril Ramaphosa, yes, the man who would one day become a president of South Africa, you know, does something that surprises a lot of people. He resigned from parliament. At the time, Ramaphosa was one of the most prominent figures in South African politics. And we will continue with Ramaphosa after this quick commercial.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the you in UNAM is you.
All right, welcome back. So we were looking at Ramaphosa, who actually, Ramaphosa decided, as it surprises a lot of people, he resigned from parliament. And at that time, Ramaphosa was also one of the most prominent figures in South Africa and a South African political. Was one of my favorite, actually, politicians at that time. Very clever. You know, in 1996, I was also studying South Africa at that time. So very, very, very prominent, you know, figure in South Africa at that time. Clever, you know. So he had been a key negotiator. He has been a key negotiator in the transition from apartheid to democracy. So, but on this day, he walked away from politics and into the world of business. It was a turning point that many thought marked the end of his political career. So, but as we all know, as we know now, life had other plans for him. So he would return to politics years later, and then eventually rise to the highest office in the land. Just goes to show, never count anyone out, really. So, yeah, and my friend, that is the 13th of April in African history. And this is on this day in Africa. Until tomorrow. So keep the stories alive. Keep African story alive. All right. So Monday, April the 13th. Welcome. If you're just joining us, good morning to you. And you are tuned into Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. So, you know, there is a powerful saying. If today we're looking at the thought for the day, you know, there's a powerful saying. He who is outside his door has already begun the hardest part of the journey. He who is outside his door has already begun the hardest part of the journey. Now, good morning, family. And think about that for a second. I want you to think about that for a second. Sometimes the hardest thing is not the long road, okay? It's not the long road ahead. It is just getting started. It is stepping out of your comfort zone. It is leaving that safe space where everything, you know, feels familiar. Because once you take that first step, once you walk out that door, you have already beaten fear, you have already beaten doubt, you know, you have already beaten hesitation. So today, don't worry much. Don't worry too much about how far you still have to go. Okay? Don't worry too much about how far do you still have to go. Just focus on starting. Send that email that you have been postponing. Make that call. Take that first step. Because the truth is, once you have begun, you're already on your way. Today, let's step out and show up today. Okay? Let's step out and show up today. That's our thought for the day this morning. All right? And thanks for joining us. It's always, as I said, it's always a pleasure for us to have you on this show. And I want you to join me on unpacking the day. So what are we looking at today? So what is our story? So what is our story this morning? You know, there's something that has caused an uproar in our society. And a lot of debate. The establishment of an exclusive VIP unit for senior government official at the Windhoek Central Hospital has actually sparked, a widespread backlash. Now, with now critics, arguing that the move contradicts, President Nandi Ndaitwah's pledge for healthcare reform. So, and that move actually reinforcing a systemic inequality. So, we're going to look at this story. We're going to look at that story from different angles and just, see where we are in terms of that. So, make sure that you unpack that with me. And now, highlighting also a shock increase in cyber threat and vulnerabilities. Paulino Shihama, a chairperson of the NICSC, is demanding that Namibia treat cybersecurity as a critical national priority rather than a mere technical issue. So that's a story in today's edition of of The Villager, and make sure that you subscribe for The Villager, and all what you need to do. It's quite simple, actually. And that if you are looking for the latest business and economic news, get yourself a free copy of the Villager. It's free, All what you need to do, you send a WhatsApp message with your name and email to 081-200-4144. And that's it. Say subscribe, and then you'll be, and then The Villager is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, if this is your first time you are tuning in here. So make sure that you subscribe, and you send your name and email to 081-200-4144. So that's a story that we're going to follow, that we're also going to look at in today's episode of Unpacking the Day. So stay tuned. When we come back, we get to our first item on the show. Good morning.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutiha with the Kirokabuna I Matina Omjo. Chikao Shafata Nana Longishifa Yaishuike Moshiwana. Iye Moyao Ota Ingongoti Samweni. Anagashifa Yananibia Ombitombwa Nawa Onjika. Seitha Nina Omeaguro Nirandipoma Ye Yongeshifa Yoyo Kupikiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe 22 meha uka kombanga nina. Kara omukwashifareki wimopo yomo programa betu. Moambo dengera selma onarahe tatuimu. Datundatu heari hamano tano oniyaj. Eagle FM. The Eye.
All right. Good morning and welcome back. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome back to Unpacking the Day. I'm your host, the Big Mike. And this morning, we are digging into a story. It's in a daily newspaper that has lit a fire. I think that has lit a fire across the nation. A story about who get the best care when they walk through the door of a public hospital. A story about promise made, promise broken, and people left standing. I think people left standing in a corridor wondering whether they still matter. Now, I want you, from the very beginning, I want you to picture this, okay? It's a Tuesday morning at Windhoek Central Hospital. Or it could be a Monday morning, it could be right now. And you have been in the queue since before sunrise. You have been there, you came in the morning. And you are tired, you are in pain. The person probably next to you has been there waiting even longer. And just down the hallway, okay, just down the hallway, behind, you know, freshly painted doors and brand new fittings, a different kind of a queue is moving. Yours is just stand still for hours, okay? And there's a different kind of a queue is moving, even faster. You know, maybe there's not even a queue, you know. Everything is quiet, one reserved for the people who run this country. So that is, you know, a section or a unit that is reserved for the people who run this country. Now, that's the image that has sparked outrage, you know, debate, and every uncomfortable national conversation, you know, that about whether healthcare in Namibia is truly for everyone or whether some people are simply more equal than others. Now, this morning, so we are going to unpack this story from every angle with you, okay? I want you to stay here on unpacking the day. So to do that with me. So we have to start from the very beginning, okay? So from a promise that sounded like a revolution, you know? Let me take you back a few months. President Etumbona Nidaitwa announced what many called the boldest healthcare directive since independence, okay? Under the vision, under Vision April, you remember? We talked about here, and everybody was, whoa, that's good. Under Vision April 2026, all senior government officials will begin using public hospital from the 1st of April. No more private clinics, no more, you know, separating the rulers from the ruled. And the president herself said she would use these facilities. That's what the president said. The stated goal was equity, you know. It was equity, that the message was very clear, that our leaders stand with the people. We stand with the people. Eh? We will use the same facilities. We will use the same system, the same queue. We will be in the same queue. Well, at least that's how we understood it. That's how many people understood it. So if that was not the case, but that's how many people understood that. But that's how it sounded. So it sounded like the kind of reform that ordinary Namibians have been demanding for years. Eh? After all, the public health system has been struggling. Bed shortages, broken equipment, you know, overcrowded wards, medication running out. Stories of people dying because ambulance took long. We have heard stories in Kavango's and other places as well. Ambulances took long, or hospital did not have the basics. You understand? So we all heard those stories. Many of us lived them. Many of us lived those stories. We lived them. We lived those stories. We experienced those stories. So when the president now said, enough, everyone uses the public system now, people listened. Okay? People even felt a flicker of hope. Maybe things we're about to change. That's what we were thinking. That's where people think maybe things were going to change. Maybe the people at the top would finally understand what the rest of the country is going through. And I remember Mandume, you know, Mandume calling saying, oh, maybe the pressure of using the same hospitals would actually force now really improvement for everybody. So I remember even some of you coming through and, you know, saying that's a good move. So it was packaged as part of the $85.7 billion development plan, you know. And for a brief moment, many of us thought, finally, the people who write the budget will sit in the same waiting room as the people who live under those budget. Just to experience what we're going through. Finally, you know, that was the promise. Now, let me show you what exactly delivered. And we're going to go into that after this commercial. Stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back, and a very good morning to you if you're just joining us. So, now, the very same week, in the same week when the directive kicked in, you know, the very same week when the directive actually kicked in, something else happened. Something that made a lot of people stop and ask, wait a minute. A brand new, specially designated unit was unveiled at Windhoek Central Hospital. Freshly upgraded, equipped with modern facilities. So when it was just when the directive as was kicked off, was just, you know, was just announced. Now, a journalist, I think from the Namibian, walked in and asked the nurses point blank, so who is this for? So they asked the nurses whether, who is this actually for? So the answer was direct. Senior government official only. Ministers, deputy ministers, member of parliament, not you, not me, not teacher from, you know, from Ondangwa or from anywhere. No nurses from Oshakati or from, you know, or from just Katutura, or maybe just from Windhoek West, just around in Windhoek West or Windhoek North there, you know. No. So now, this is actually only meant for 294 people. 294 people. Just read the papers. So out of how many of we are? Out of nearly 3 million people, not 13. Out of nearly 3 million people. 294 people. Now, and here's what I need you to understand, okay? This is what I want you to understand. The ministry, the health ministry's own spokesperson confirmed it. He was asked, are teachers and nurses VIPs? His answer was no, of course. Was no. Phase one is for VIP only. All right? It's only for VIP. Not even the dependents, and it's even indicated that it's not even the dependent of the officials may use the unit. So the directives say everyone, but the directive says everyone uses a public hospital. But the very same government that issued the directives immediately carved out a special section for itself, for themselves. So one set of the door is for you, okay? Another set of the door is for them. Same building, same hospital name, you know, but a world of difference in what waits inside. You know, what is waiting inside is totally different for, you know, for there's some doors for you and some door for them. Now, let me put it plainly. The government told us everyone would share the same system. The reason why we're focusing on this is because the directive says we would share the same system. Then they built a separate system within the system. And this is for themselves. Now ask yourself, does that sound like a reform? Does that sound like the reform that you have been waiting for? Does that sound like, I think that sounds like a rebranding privilege. No, seriously, it sounds like a rebranding privilege. That's how it sounds, definitely. It doesn't sound like a reform that many of you probably have been waiting. That's how it's going to be. Or maybe that's what you were expecting. Now, I think one thing I always said, the number don't lie, okay? The number don't lie. And the other things that you need to do when you read all this about things of the government or anything else, just follow the money. Okay? Follow the money. Okay? And the numbers don't lie. And the number in this story tell you everything that speeches don't tell you. You listen to the piece. Look at the number. Find out what are the numbers that are there. Okay? They tell you something. They don't lie. Then what actually a person is saying. So the government allocated a $3.189 billion to CIMA. I want to give you a broader understanding, you know, of other issues that are going on in the health sectors, in the Ministry of Health, and how does this make sense, all right, given what is going on. I'm just giving you a broader understanding. Now, the government allocated the $3.189 billion to CIMA, to the public service employment, public service. What is CIMA? Public Service Employees Medical Aid Scheme. All right, in the current appropriate bill. Now, that is 25% of the entire finance ministry budget. You know, going to one medical aid scheme. But here's the problem. Okay, here's the problem. Last financial year, CIMA overspent its budget by $659.3 million. They blew past their allocation. And the total expenditure hit actually $4.21 billion. For a scheme covering roughly, now that's a scheme covering roughly 309,000 beneficiaries. Now, hold that number into your mind now. The 4.21 billion for the 300,000 people. Hold on that number. And then compare it to what the rest of the country gets. So, while that money flows to CIMA, and that was actually the Windhoek Observer. The Windhoek Observer reported that the health ministry, while that money flows to the CIMA, the Windhoek Observer reported that the health ministry returned approximately $700 million to the treasury. Returned it. While the hospital, you know the stories of the hospital, hospital across the country are running out of medicine. Are running out of medicine. So Nearly 300 essential commodities at the Central Medical Stores are at critical low level. And we covered it here. We talked about it here. Okay? We're talking antiretrovirals for over 200,000 people living with HIV. We're talking about insulin. We're talking about morphine. We're talking about malaria test kits, vaccines, you know. So the ministry itself admitted, even the ministry itself admits the stock level as around 51%. So the sources inside the system, inside the ministry, says it's actually below 40%. The target was 80%. And we were nowhere close to that target. So I will say it again slowly. 700 million returned to the treasury, medicine running out, and a VIP ward get built in weeks. In weeks. So let that sit with you now, my dear listener. Let that sit with you. You can see the priorities. Okay? So I'm going to paint you two pictures, okay, for you. And these are not hypothetical, all right? These are not hypothetical. These are documented reality happening in the same city, in the same healthcare system right now as we speak. Now, let me give you a picture one. Just a week ago, a member of parliament described what she saw at Katutura Hospital. She arrived around 9 in the morning and found a long queue. Okay, she called a person in that queue at 1 in the afternoon, and they were still waiting. By 4 o'clock, when the parliament was wrapping up for the day, the same person had still not been seen. It hasn't been seen yet by a nurse or by a doctor. And while they waited, two elderly women, our grandmothers, if you like, my dear listeners, you know, were lying on the floor, not on the chair, not on the bed, on the floor, because they couldn't sit any longer. Okay? Now, the health minister herself admitted she witnessed this with her own eyes. Eh? She attributed it to staff shortages. The ministry is trying to recruit to 2,000 healthcare workers, but only 70% of those positions have been filled. Now, picture two. Down the corridor at Windhoek Central, a newly renovated unit, reserved, exclusive, for 294 senior officials. Climate controlled, upgraded, ready for business within weeks. Within weeks. You know, two pictures, one system, and let me ask you this. If you are a grandmother lying on that hospital floor in Katutura, what message does that VIP ward send you? What message do you get? Eh? What message do you get? It says, if you are that grandma on the floor, it says your suffering is tolerable. Okay? Your suffering is tolerable. Eh? We can tolerate your suffering. But what does it mean for them? Their comfort is urgent. It means like, okay, you can lie down, you can suffer. It's terrible. But their comfort is urgent. You know, we need to attend to their comfort so quickly. Okay? That's what it means. That's exactly what it means. And sometimes it makes your soul boil. Eh? Seriously, it does make your soul boil, you know. And here's the detail that would almost be funny. It, went so tragic, if it went so tragic. The minister announced the 294 official directive at the very same time, at the same event where they celebrated restoring the hot water system at Windhoek Central Hospital. She announced at the same time. So now the hot water system, it had been broken. And for how long that has been broken? It's how long for her that has been blocked? It's for many, the restoration project took 7 months and cost $6.4 million. And that has been broken for years. 14 new, what has they put in the 14 new industrial, geysers, replacing old galvanized pipes, maternity ward repairs. So, think about what that means. Mother were giving birth in a hospital without a reliable hot water. For years they have been doing that. But the VIP unit, that was ready on the schedule. The VIP unit was ready on schedule, my friend. So what does that tell you? Priority, my dear listeners, priorities. That's what it tells you. So there is also an issue. There has been some, you know, some critics and especially the opposition talking about, you know, the law. Let me take you now to the law, because the opposition has raised a constitutional argument that deserves a serious examination. It does deserve a serious examination, not as a political noise, okay? Not as a political noise, but as a legal substance. So it deserves a serious examination. Now, Article 10, I also went to look at those articles, you know, some of those that were mentioned, just to see for myself as well. You don't get a time actually to read the Constitution sometimes. Now, the Article 10 of the Namibian Constitution, crystal clear. It says, and we're looking at that in terms of what's happening in terms of this. So, and I want everyone, every listener to hear this. All person shall be equal before the law. And then it adds, no person may be discriminated against on the ground of sex, race, color, ethnic origin, religion, creed, or socio or economic status. Socio or economic status. That is our constitution. Not in the opposition. This is not in the opposition manifesto, not in the someone's opinion column or something. In the supreme law of this republic. So when the government create a healthcare unit that is accessible only to people of certain social status, economic status, or political rank, and explicitly exclude teachers, nurses, police officers, every other citizen, how is that not discrimination on the basis of social status? So that's not me, okay? That's not me asking provocative question for radio, okay? That's a constitutional question that deserves a legal answer. Definitely. And Article 95, it goes further. It obliges the state, you know, to actively promote and maintain the welfare of the people, including, and I'm paraphrasing here, consistent planning to raise and maintain an acceptable level of nutrition and standard of living, and to improve public health. Not elite health, not VIP health, public health. public health. And this was also raised by the IPC leader Panduleni Tana has argued this argument, have argued that this arrangement actually violates Article 30, the oath of office, because the president swore to ensure justice for all inhabitants. So several former MPs, including also Kallis Latving, was also asked, and also Nahas Angula, have called the directive unlawful. They call that unlawful, premature, inhuman. That's some of them. That's some of what the things. That's some of these, former MPs said. It's unlawful. It's premature. It's inhuman. Now, you may agree or disagree with their politics, but the constitutional text is not political. It is black and white, and it doesn't have a VIP clause in it. Eh? It does not have a VIP clause in it. So, think about that. So, is this constitutional? Is this constitutional what is happening? And there has been, the government arguing with itself. There's also some contradictions. Now, so I think, the deputy minister, for example, the minister said, and I'm paraphrasing, that the hospital is not exclusive, okay? It is inclusive. She said anyone with medical aid, now listen, she said anyone with medical aid who can afford it can walk in and use the facility. She framed it as an open and welcoming. Now, first of all, my dear Deputy Minister, if the unit is truly inclusive and open to the public, why does the signature and the staff on the ground, according to the story, say otherwise? When the journalist visited the unit, nurses were very clear. This is for the senior government official only. So the signature, during apartheid, white only, black only. On this one, official government, senior official government only. No ambiguity, no invitation, a closed door. So we have a direct contradiction between what a senior official is saying publicly and what is happening on the ground. So which version do you believe? The politician words, or the reality on the floor? Now, secondary, and this is critical, the deputy minister talks about affordability as if that is the only barrier. Now, she framed it as anyone who can afford it can come, But that framing betrays the fundamental misunderstanding, or perhaps a deliberate sidestepping of what public healthcare is supposed to be. What is public health supposed to be? A public health care exists precisely because many people cannot afford private care. That's what it means. That's what public care, public health care exists for. Now, telling a pensioner, are you kind of now telling a pensioner or a street vendor or unemployed mother that she is welcome to use the VIP wing as long as she can pay for it, as long as she can pay for it, that is not... That's not exclusion. That's not inclusion. That's not what public health care is all about. It is exclusion. That's exclusion dressed up in a polite language, my dear Madam Deputy Minister. Seriously. That's exclusion. Because the street vendors, the pensioners, the unemployed mother, she will not be able to pay. Then the ministry-owned spokesperson, the ministry-owned spokesperson turned around and said exactly the opposite. Phase one is only for VIPs. No teachers, no nurses, no dependents of officials. Only 294 people. Now, he confirmed that, he also confirmed that similar units are being planned for Oshakati, Rundu, Wavish Bay, Kietmansop, and Onanjokwe. He confirmed that. So, there it is. No ambiguity this time. This is a two-tier system. A two-tier system, you know, being built into the heart of public health care. One tier for the powerful, another tier for everyone else. And the government is investing resources, time, and public money to make sure that distinction is physically built in the world of our hospitals. But listen, all right? I don't want to get stuck on only on Windhoek, because this VIP word is actually a symptom of something much deeper. All right? Now, you remember there was this research published in a peer-reviewed academic journals, and it has documented the structural inequality in Namibia's healthcare system for years. So, now, one study found that Ohangwena, think about this, Ohangwena, one of the most deprived regions in this country, receives approximately 8-9% less for the public health budget that it would under an equitable need-based allocation would actually receive that. Meanwhile, Hardap, one of the least deprived, get about 73% more than its fair share. Now, the poorest get the least, the wealthiest get the most. So, and nobody fixed the formula. Now, the government plans to roll out similar VIP units in Oshakati, Rundu, Wavish Bay, you know, Kietmansop, and Onanjokwe. But here's the question, you know, which I haven't heard anyone ask. Will those units be built at the same speed, like the one in Windhoek, with the same quality? Or will rural Namibians again get the leftovers version of what Windhoek elite received first? And remember now, the medicine crisis doesn't respect postcodes. ARV are running low nationally. I mean, when we are doing all this, and remember the Windhoek Observer documented that emergency medicine purchases, something that we looked at the other day, purchases are costing up to 5 times the normal price. Eh? Factor all those issues. In one case, polio vaccine that used to cost about $150 through intermediaries shot up now to nearly $400 per dose under the government. Now, do you see this change that went under the government direct procurement model? The very model that's supposed to save money is, if I use medical language, hemorrhaging it, you know? It's hemorrhaging it. So while the VIP award are being polished, the medicine pipeline that saves million is cracking. My friend, that's not a footnote. That's headline. Okay? That's headline. So, now, you're most welcome. You can come through as well if you feel like you want to jump in now. Our telephone number, we're coming through. We're coming to you from Ondangwe Studio, 08333-66091, 08333-66091, 08333-66091. So, if you feel that, you know, you want to come through as well and have your contribution, have your share, or have your reaction as well. Now, so there are also multiple opposition voice and analysts have you? The people who have used the word apartheid to describe this arrangement. Now, I'm careful person with words. Okay, apartheid was a specific system of racial domination. You know, what we are seeing here is a class-based separation, something very typical in Angola. You know, a class-based separation, not racial segregation. It's a class-based separation. You know, so the comparison is not perfectly parallel, I think, for those who have actually used this as apartheid. But here, I think that here is why the word maybe keeps surfacing and why it is think so deeply, because, you know, you remember, and this is typical, you know, Windhoek Central Hospital was built during the colonial era, you know. It operated under racially segregated healthcare system. Black Namibians were sent to Katutura, so white Namibians were treated at Central. Now, that is our history, and it's not ancient history. It's within our living memory. So when you take that same building, now when you take the same building, building that carries the DNA of medical apartheid, and you create a separate, upgraded unit for a new class of elites, I think the echoes are really unmistakable. The echoes are really unmistakable. The diving, you know, the dividing line has shifted from race. You know, it has shifted from then it was race, but now it's rank. Okay? But the structure is the same. You see, the structure is the same. Some citizens get equal care, get equality care, if you like. Some citizens get equality care, others get what is left. And in the story also, analyst Duba, you know, Kamwanya, put it precisely. So the speed, he said, the speed of this upgrade compared to years of neglect for ordinary citizen create the impression that some are more equal than others. The speed of how this is actually done with all other pressing issues within the ministry, you know, it creates an impression that some people are more equal than others. So, yeah. And political analyst Richie Tender called it publicly stunt. It's a publicity stunt. So we have also some people from the parliament, the heir to Hafeni Kalola, called it a migration of elite from private hospital of poor quality, private hospital of poor quality, to a public hospital of a better quality. Yeah. And also we had PDM's McHenry Venani asking the most basic question for all. And this is a very good question. If you want a uniform system, why are you separating people? And all of us thought, well, now everybody got to use the same. Well, it's the same system with another system inside the system. And with that question, if you want a uniform system, why are you separating the people? And nobody in the government has answered that question. And silence in politics, well, is its own kind of an answer, definitely. All right. What do you think? So please do come through. Our telephone number is 0833-66091, 0833-66091. So, now, what we still don't know, I think there are still unanswered questions, for my part, you know, there's still unanswered question this story doesn't tell. Because the gap in information are just as revealing as the information itself. Now, Let's look at some of the things, okay, that I want you really to think hard. Okay, how much did the VIP unit cost? This is never things that has been talked about. Nobody has disclosed a figure, not the ministry, not the works department, or not the Minister of Work and not the Minister of Work and Transport. So not the presidency. In a country where the health budget is under extreme pressure, it's really under extreme pressure. Where we talked about earlier, where Simba's overspent by 659 million. The public has a right to know exactly how much was spent on a facility for 294 people. Where's the budget line item? Where is the budget line item? Now, think about that. Think about that now. Second thing is, if the president directive was genuinely about promoting equity, okay, why was the VIP unit not part of the public conversation before it was built? Why was it not debated in the National Assembly? Why was there no public consultation? You know, I think a policy this significant, maybe it wouldn't have been needed if it was not only for 294 people. A policy this significant, one that touches on the constitutional rights and the social contract between state and citizens, should not be introduced by decree, because this has been introduced by decree. And then quietly, and while probably the cameras are pointing elsewhere, you know, building, you know, the unit. Now, we hear that the phase two start 2027. Okay? Let's see who is knocking on my door. A very good morning to you. Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Morning, Mike.
Good morning, Uncle Bona. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you too?
I'm all right.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the discussion on the table.
Yeah.
Is good. Maybe let me start from the resistance of discrimination in South Africa. You mentioned about the historical perspective.
Yeah.
How the really people went around, the Ramaphosa, somebody that is my mentor anyway, is my champion.
Yeah.
And how the people were killed there. So now the issue is to dismantle this discriminatory practice.
Yeah.
And now in the context of our health system,
yeah,
where I have heard and read that the public free health system is being centralized,
mm-hmm,
that's some of the areas. But the issue of VIP getting there,
yeah,
maybe that is a positive discrimination, which I think also gives some kind of urge. Because usually when I hear in the past, before this time,
yeah,
I always hear people saying, no, why are the VIP not going to the public hospital? Why do they go there and there? And they should lead with the example.
Yeah.
I don't know whether this is one of the examples that is being used to approach and all to deal with those issues. But to me, it's a good thing because they really have to read the example. Despite, notwithstanding the other people to follow, because even, it's not that, to me, it's not a negative discrimination if such a thing does is happening.
Mm.
But I just feel that since you say it's the first phase, and how we follow the leadership, and I'm sure if at all, even anybody else,
yeah,
those who might not be going to the public hospital now, just Mburukuta to the Katutula or wherever, I'm just giving an example.
Yeah.
And they are crowded there with those categories. Because usually categories are not really discriminatory. So except where you now maybe regulate those activities in a way that it is really going to have a serious impact
on
the life of the people.
Yeah, no, I think, okay, in a way, I think there are some argument for one can look at, but what create a role in debate is that, you know, the image that was created, you know, is that, you know, everybody now, the system will be the same, nobody will be, you know, served differently. So that's the initially what has been the people understood. All right, and then that's what the people understood at the very beginning. Yeah, now when they see that the VIP unit has been built within a short period of time, when we have other pressing issue within the ministry itself, where you still have people who have no medicine in the clinics or whatever the case, that's what create that. What is the priority really? You know. So, those are some of issues. Yes. And given...
I respect their views and their understanding. Yeah, maybe this also a concern to be... You just have to now raise some issues that, yes, now that the VIPs are going there, are they going with those other medicine that are not there, or were they not there before? If they were not there before, what could be the problem?
It's looking at how do we prioritize the money that we have. Shouldn't have maybe now more worried about the shortage of medicine rather than actually building a new modernized facility, because it doesn't make any difference if you are going to the private sector. Like, it doesn't make difference if you are going to the private sector, because you're still going to the private sector in the public hospital.
Yes. The reason is to cut those fundings that go to the private sector and invest them in here. And it's also a good gesture if, for example, you have now started having those modern equipment, modern infrastructure and things like that, rather than now leaving it for the people to just go to and use the private hospital. Which one is they have got more, the majority benefit? So I understand your concern. It's very important.
Yeah.
But now you just leave it there, and then what? Then the goals of realizing the free public care, health care service there will not be realized. It's where people are talking about a universal health system. And now if you have now done this for the first phase,
But still,
and it's not a discriminatory. To me, it's not a discriminatory in a way.
Really?
That's my argument.
Yeah.
I told you maybe you can, if you use the positive discrimination, which my boss used to use, in terms of doing that, to me, it's not a discrimination. It's just a phase that has begun. The second phase, I don't know when it will begin. Or maybe perhaps people know, and then this is the first, second phase, the third phase, and things like that. Like I said, it's true. If you don't do it systematically, You have I don't know whether they will be overcrowded or they they give the pressure now to the supply for the medical or whatever, but the supply for medication should not be compromised, which I know they are not. And if it's just the first phase, the second phase, and things, and this is how you do the implement the project actually. Or is there any other way you just implement it from phase one up to the whole cycle at once? Is that how they do it? Perhaps.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. That's my concern, and I understand I reason the voice.
Yeah.
The opposition, their proportions, proposition in that on those ones. Mm. But to me, it's more like politics.
All right.
Their concerns seem to be sounding as a political kind of a game, which in this case, we are looking at the benefits of the majority, which I don't think this medication and all these other things are compromised. If they are compromised, maybe something to...
No, at the moment, we're looking at the benefits of 294 people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what we're looking at the moment.
And that money that has done that is taken from the money that's supposed to be toward the community members? Is that what you're saying? Or that's what they are saying?
What are they saying? I didn't get your question.
I'm saying that now the money that is that was invested in that project,
yeah,
was taken from the budget that was supposed to go to the masses.
Yeah.
And I remember,
yeah, because if the masses doesn't have medicines, definitely that money is supposed to go to them and get the medicine that are sought in the
clinics. What about the one that you said it went back?
Exactly.
Can't it also be utilized to procure the medication and other things? I'm just thinking.
Those are the issues. Exactly. Why? Those are the issues.
So then you can use that one if it's returned. Use that one now to procure the medication and do the other essential services, so that you don't compromise the supply of the medication.
All right.
That's what I'm saying.
All right, thank you, Bwana.
All right. 08-333-66091. 08-333-66091. All right. Yeah, it's true. We're all looking at this from different angles, and that's a good thing. All right. So, all right. First two start in 2027. That's a full year now. What happened in the gap, you know, for 12 months or more? Ordinary SEMA members, 118,000 civil servant, 163,000 dependents remain locked out of the upgraded facility. So, yeah, what specific measurable improvement will they see in that time? Or are we being asked to take it on a faith, kind of like, okay, just like us, this is what's gonna, just have a faith in that? Well, yeah, that's up to you to figure that out. Now, the government is at the same time conducting a regional consultation on the as I think maybe as mentioned, what Uncle Bono mentioned, universal coverage. Is also conducting a regional consultation on universal health coverage bill. We talk about the bill now. Universal means everyone. So, but the VIP unit is the opposite of universal. It is exclusive by design, you know? So it's exclusive by design. How do you square those two policies, you know? How do you write a universal health care law while at the same time building a system that is fundamental and equal? That's a contradiction. I think that's a contradiction that hasn't been addressed. Not once at all. So, yeah. And the other question that I have, you know, is the health minister reportedly said that anyone with medical aid who feel this is a better option can come and use the facility. Now, that raises a fundamental question about the nature of the unit itself. So, is this public health facility or a private one? Because if medical aid is the entry ticket, then it is not public. It is not public. It's a private ward inside the public building. That's what it is. It's a private ward inside the public building, subsidized by public money, you know, accessible only to those who can pay. That's not healthcare reform. That's a healthcare commodification wearing a public mask. That's a commodification wearing a public mask. Now, sometimes when we talk about policy and politics, you know, it can feel abstract, you know? It can feel like something that happened in Windhoek, in a boardroom, in a press conference, far away from your daily life. So that's why maybe you're not even kind of like, okay, see, how does that touch me? How does that affect me? But this is not abstract. This is about what happened when your mother fall ill. This is what happened when your child needs emergency care at midnight. You know, this is about whether the hospital you arrive at will treat you with dignity or make you feel like you're a burden.
Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, and how are you?
I'm all right.
I don't really have much to say.
Yeah.
I just feel like this is all, the afro is more of just political noise, because most people are not using public health care because they beg to use it or because they cannot afford better.
Yeah.
They are there because the government is forcing them to use it.
Yeah.
And it's more like, if I pay tax and I contribute to my health care through FEMA,
yeah,
why should I be equal to someone who doesn't? So for me, there will always be different classes for as long as there's payments involved. And for as long as there's someone who can afford and who cannot afford. So maybe the government should just bring their facilities to standard, maybe, so that while people who can afford private health care use private health care, the people who cannot afford it also have something better at the public hospital.
Yeah.
But
I think the issue here, one was looking at, okay, if this is open to anybody, any CIMA holder, you know, member, then it's fine. You know, that is fine. When now this is actually just for about 294 people, given now that are issues that are going on within the ministry, that's where they become more debatable. And why would you bring it in a public hospital where now you have other people that are in the queue for how many hours, and now they're looking at you, the other side that's just going through a minute? You know, what does it say? It just said you're not important. Yeah. Because you can't afford this. In a public hospital, that's, it says something different.
Yeah, you are right. All FEMAS holders should have access to it.
Yeah.
Yes, you are right.
A teacher, a police officer, whoever, should be able to walk in as well.
But now, looking on the fact that there's two queues now, one is a faster moving, one is better healthcare, one is for the poor. That's the consequence of what people are pushing for.
Yeah.
Like, we are sort of pushing for something that's a bit impossible under the current infrastructure that we have. So, it's a consequence that has to be there.
Yeah.
I don't really know how we can go about that, but it's a tricky situation.
Yeah, no, no. I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind to say, look, okay, definitely that if you can afford it, anyone who it's more like, okay, we're cutting maybe money go to the private sector, as Uncle Bonner maybe mentioned, we're cutting off money going to the private sector now is within the government, which I understand that. But in terms of how whoever access it, let everybody who have SIM as a members, let everyone access it, you know.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, that's where now the problem comes. Okay?
But my other point with regards to this whole thing is that this people must remember that the public sector, the private sector enjoys people.
Yeah.
The people employed there, lots of them.
Mm.
Like, now if you cut off funding, now with all these certain things that they brought about, the $5,000 caps on, they say, laboratory use. Now, if they squeeze us out of the private sector, where will we go?
Exactly, yeah. First of all, I mean, even if you build this unit in a public facilities, that won't be enough for all, you know, SIMA members.
Yeah,
you know, for all public service, public servants, it won't be enough. So you still actually have to use private sectors.
Yeah, but I think we have to observe this year to see how it helps us in the next one.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is also how this being a priority, given other issues that are within the ministry itself. You understand?
Mm.
Yeah, so...
I think these people, they like jumping to bigger things. What's the seed of fixing the current problems?
Yeah.
The smaller current problems that are affecting people were supposed to be fixed first, like the shortage of medication and those things that you mentioned.
Exactly. You
fix them and then you look at the bigger, ambitious project. But when you jump to the ambitious stuff, it's like I've observed this with many other entities in Namibia. Like, people are jumping to 4G and other, to 5G and other things, but connectivity around is weak, there's no towers, there's nothing. But they are very ambitious to jump to 5G and other.
And you know what that becomes? It just become accessible to those who can afford. And then you create that gap, you know, that inequality which Namibia is known for on the planet. We continue creating that gap.
Yeah, okay, Mr. Seville, I need to get back to it.
All right, no, thanks, man. Thanks for coming through.
Oh, okay.
Mm.
Away 333-66091. Away 333-66091. We're looking at, you know, two-tier system of healthcare within our health system as this VIP become a reality, in a central hospital. Now imagine you're a teacher, you know, you're a teacher in Ondangwa, in Oshakati, you know, anywhere. So you have been working in the public schools system for 20 years. Okay. You earn modest salary. You pay your taxes. You contribute to this country every single day. Now, one day you need a medical attention. Eh? You go to the local hospital. You join the queue. You wait for hours. The ward is full. The doctor is overworked, as the case all the time. The medication you need is not available today. Okay? Come back next week. They tell you. Okay? That's what happened to most of people. Now imagine that a few corridor away, okay, you are told, well, come back next week. But imagine that a few corridor away, in the same hospital, a government official walk in and is seen immediately. No queue, no waiting, a comfortable bed, a modern equipment, the doctor has time, you know, the medication is stocked. Yeah? It's stocked, they have medication. In the same hospital. And your tax money help pay for that experience. Your tax money help pay for that experience. Your sacrifice, your patience, you know, your contribution to this nation funded the comfort of someone who already has more power, okay, who already have more power, more money, more privileges than you will ever see. I don't know why not everybody sees that. And that is not hypothetical. That's not hypothetical. That is the reality being built right now in 6 hospitals across the Namibia. And the question for every listener this morning is whether you are willing to accept that reality. Well, yes, some are. You know, we have, Now, whether you believe that the people you elected to serve you should serve themselves first. Basically, that's what it is. Why don't we fix first the lack of medicine, the lack of staff? Then, let's think of then that. Now, whether the promise of independent, you know, I'm thinking whether the promise of independence, the sacrifice of our liberation struggle, was meant to create a society where a hospital had 2 sides, a 5-star ward for politician and a worn-out ward for everyone else. Is that what was, you know, the promise of independence, the sacrifice of our liberation struggle? All right. We'll come back after this. Stay tuned.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
Imbaya rire ombwa nai epetaweza kwa ombu nikiro ombe ombi hukusha. Njiviro yoye irire ombupu ohakane na wina ikare no matha kumurungu wa indu. Weriro ngere kusha umune ondengu ukura kwa imba. Una ovi umeria peke kwa wondola mirongo vitatu na hambu umwe mumwe stoo. Twika ovinki no kukara norupa ondando ya peke yukia nja oshimariva. Owa peresente dano kumyeve vitatu moshimariva. Owa peresente umurongo kumyeve hambu umwe moshimariva. Owa peresente umirongo ivari na dano. Kumyeve mulonga na ivari moshimarifu. Itoarerera ondengu jima yu ungura na wakove na wina onyanukife. Ashiesho imba ye kupe oshimariva shishihina omaruhiro. Imba o maoronga neno uyebu haka enina. Itako na wina rishangita jinun.
No man. All right, welcome back. And a very good morning to you. If you're just joining us. So let's just wrap up this segment, okay? Let me leave you with the key point that I hope you will carry with you into the coming days or weeks on this. Now, the President Directive on Public Health Care was presented as a move towards equity, okay? But at the same time, creation of VIP unit for senior official contradict the very spirit that directive. So a policy that create 2 classes of patient in the same hospital is not equality. It's not equity. You know, it's hierarchy. Okay? And that's what is the article looking at. The other thing, the second thing, is that there are direct contradiction between the government officials, what the government officials are saying publicly and what is happening on the ground. You know, if the unit is open to the public, why are nurses turning down, you know, turning people away? If it's affordable, why medical aid being mentioned as a requirement? So, and number 3, the constitutional and legal question raised by opposition leaders, it deserves a serious investigation. So whether this policy violates Article 30 of the Constitution or the Labor Act is not a matter of political opinion. It's a matter of law. And it should be tested. It should be tested. Now, number 4, the cost, the timeline, and the planning process behind the VIP unit. It lacks transparency. The public has a right to know how much is being spent, who approved it, and why there was no public consultation. So in number five, the story is ultimately about, I think it's about trust. You know, it's about whether government that promises stand, the government that promises to stand with the people is actually standing above them. And when trust erodes in a democracy, everything else follows. We have seen that. Well, Namibia, the ball is in your court. This is your healthcare system. These are your hospitals. This is your money. The question is not whether politicians deserve quality care. Of course they do. Everyone does. The question is whether quality care should be reserved for a privileged few, or whether it should be a right enjoyed by every Namibian, regardless their title, their position, their bank account. That's what universal coverage is all about. You know, and I want you to think this seriously when you come through, if you come through. All right? So the health minister was asked about elderly woman lying on the hospital floor at Katutura. And she said she saw it with her own eyes. She knows. The government knows. They have always known. Now, the question is not whether they see the problem. The question is, when they look at the hospital floor, where the grandmother is lying, waiting, and then walk down the corridor into a fresh painted VIP ward, do they feel anything? Do you feel anything? If you're listening. Well, this is Unpacking the Day. And always follow the money. Follow the money. Question the power. And never ever, never ever accept being treated like a second class citizen in your own country. All right? Never. All right? Never ever. Okay. 08333-66091. 08333-66091. That's a number you can call, you know, if you want to react on this. When we come back, we get to our second story. But you're most welcome to come through and have your share of your opinion.
Omutiha with the Kirokabuna e Matina Omjo. Chikao Shafas and Anana Longishifa, yai Shuike Moshiwana, e Moyao, or Tango Samweni. Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Orangika. Seithanina, Omaguro, Nirantitoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Yokupigramo, Ikelefem Media House. Gwe 20 Meneha, Uka Kompanga Nina. Kara omkwashi pareki wimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengera selma konara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oniaj. Igel FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, good morning, good morning. And if you're just joining us, you just tune in to Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. And this is your number one talk radio station, the eye. All right, our time is about 37 minutes past the hour of 9, and the program goes up to 10 o'clock when we'll be handing over to Tate France coming up with Kuthamosha. All right. Make sure that you tune in for that, because it's always pumped up. It's always pumped up, just like any other programs that's coming your way from this station. All right. So good morning. You are tuned into Unpacking the Day. So we're now, this is where we break down, you know, top stories. And at this segment, we are talking about something that could, you know, that could actually empty your bank account. Something that is quietly attacking our country right now, every single day. And most of us do not even know it is happening. Okay? So I'm talking about cybersecurity. As something that that for many of us, it might sound like a world of only for, those are the world only for tech geeks, you know, those guys in IT departments, maybe in your company, that you don't even care, you know, that's for the IT people. But the truth is, it's much bigger than that, actually. It's a national issue. And we have to come to learn to understand that it's a national issue, one that is growing more urgently by the day. So in today's edition of The Villager, there's a story by H.D. Hande Walenga, on cybersecurity. So make sure that you look at that, in more details. So, as I said, it's becoming a national security. When you look at the numbers, it's something that becomes a national issue, and we need to pay attention to that. So, and here's what happened. So here's what happened this past Friday, in Windhoek, the National International Cybersecurity Conference and Exhibition, known as NICSC, launched its 2026 cybersecurity awareness campaign. Now, the chairperson of the NICSC, Paulinus Sihama, delivered a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call, calling us, and I mean now when I say us, you know, the government, the business, everyday citizen, you and I, to treat cybersecurity not just as a technical issue, but as a critical national priority. You know, as a critical national priority. So, and this was not just a way, you know, a vague kind of warning. When I said this is a wake up call, the warning that he was talking about, what he was warning us, it's not just some kind of a vague, you know, warning. So he's talking about real numbers. And you know what do I say? Numbers don't lie, you know. Numbers don't lie, you know. And it's just shocking numbers. I talk about shocking numbers here. And when I read this, my eyes just pop out. And do you know that in the past year alone, Namibia recorded 1.1 million cyber threat. You know, just imagine, you have to put it in this way. When, if you didn't know, now I'm kind of like, when I hear that, when I read 1.1 million cyber threat, it's, you know, like when you are, let's say, for example, you're in an environment. Let's go to a healthcare. That's what we're talking about. You are in an environment where you are surrounded by, you know, health threat that you don't see of that magnitude, you know, just of that magnitude. Just imagine 1.1 million cyber threat. So you kind of like, we're surrounded by this threat, which you don't even know, just because it didn't hit you. It didn't mean that, you know, you were not at risk. You see that? That a million, and that number has doubled from the previous year. So it doubled from the previous year. It became even more. And it doesn't stop there. By 31st December 2025, the number has escalated to over 1.7 million cyber event and more than 2.2 million cyber vulnerabilities. 2.2. With only 5 incidents, according to the article, you know, are formally managed and reported. That's actually, it should give you some chills in your in your body, really. Eh? So you might not, until, you know, one day, and I'm not hoping that this happened to anybody. You might not now, you might not really pay attention to that. Like most of us, there could be people there that are actually protecting us. Like we can say about our bank, about our, you know, institutional, financial, or government in a way, whatever, you know, or whatever agency that are protecting our data on the phone or whatever. It's just because it didn't happen to you now, you don't see how serious this is. And I'm talking about myself. And here, I'm really honestly talking about myself because nothing happened to me. The world, my world seems to be just okay. And now hearing 1.1, you know, or 2.2 cyber vulnerabilities, you know, that's give me chill. You know, that's honestly give me some chills in my body. So, and I think the question probably we need to look at is why this is actually important to you and to me. Because I know what some of us are thinking, you know. Numbers are just numbers. When you talk about 2.2, you know, vulnerabilities and all that, cyber vulnerability and all that, what does this mean for me? Sitting in my house in Ondangwa or running my shop in Omsati region or something, or working at the municipality in Kidmanswap. What does that mean to me? What does that number really mean? That 2.2? That 1.1? What does it mean? Now, okay, let me paint a picture from the article. Maybe you won't get a time to read the article. Now, think about your grandmother, okay? Or your mother, or your aunt. Now, the woman who worked for 35 years, saved every cent, and finally retired with a million Namibian dollar in her account. Now, imagine she wakes up one morning, checks her balance, and it is gone. Okay? And it's gone, just like that. Okay, maybe this is someone who have this has happened to her or to him.
A
very good morning to you.
Okay. Yes, Dr. Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, and yourself?
I'm all right, Dr. Mike.
It's a Monday morning.
It's Monday morning. It's all bro Monday. Dr. Mike, I think I'm regretting, and I think I have to swallow my heart.
Yeah.
Because I was just congratulating her for bringing the health coverage.
Exactly. And I was saying, you know, I was even mentioned earlier, I said, well, Mandume was actually saying that's a good thing.
Celebrating because it's my friend.
You know, and then boom, you know.
Oh, my goodness. This is like a stab and what? Behind the back.
Yeah.
Well, it hurt, my friend. Are we really serious? Are we going to have also a red line in the hospital? Which one is separating the what? Ambulance and no, guys,
it's
man.
No, line, yeah.
No. We don't need to wear these things like this.
Yeah.
Listen, if you are there to protect all the Namibian people, you as a president, and you swear. Now, what is this?
But there's a point, I remember, Uncle Bora came in. One point that I'm taking from what he says that, well, that would save money that would actually go to the private sector, you know.
It does, but the thing is that when you look, people are going to be stabbed at the back. Then the back is the public servant.
Yeah.
We cannot afford to go to state in that VIP.
Yeah.
And remember, you are contributing to your medical aid. Mm. And now you are broke to go to what? Private, because unless you are forking out your from your pocket.
Yeah. No, the thing is here, no. The point for me is here. If you from the very beginning said, okay, now we want to save money, and one way to save money, it's bringing the private sector, bringing the private that we go to, we're bringing in the public hospitals. You understand? So we said we're bringing it in the private hospital. I mean in the public hospitals. We will have a VIP within our private sector. I mean within our public sector, and whoever can afford can go there or something like that. But we will start with then I understand that's what you're gonna do and that's what you're doing. That I would appreciate. But when were you talking about that, you know, we will all use the same system, we'll try to improve whatever the healthcare, where our cuckoo spend, if it's good for our cuckoo, it's good for you as a parliamentarian. And then you come around and then now you're doing this. This is when, as you said, that's a step in the back. That's enough in your back, in someone's back, really, you know.
Very much.
Yeah.
Because now, look, Mike, me also, I fought to us, supposed to be like everybody is welcome to what?
Yeah.
To new hospital, public hospital.
And if but you can't, and if you can't do it for everybody, if you can't do it for everybody, don't do it.
Huh? Don't do it, exactly. That's the problem. Because now, remember one thing, that we as a public, we still continue where we have a special shortage of medicine.
Exactly.
Where we are going to have a long queue waiting for doctors for a week.
Yeah.
Then you see this person is coming in as a called a VIP. He's going in and coming out. Well, you are standing in the queue for 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock in the morning, afternoon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you rather do it. You rather do it somewhere at the private doctor where I don't see you.
Yeah, where we cannot see you.
Yeah, rather than where I can see you while I'm here for almost 3 hours. And you remember what I was saying? As a nurse or as a private as a civil servant, I actually pay for the comfort that you're actually getting in.
Getting it exactly.
Eh?
And I don't feel you are so entitled to everything. Yeah. Well, I'm the one contributing to what? Then I'm there.
Yeah,
take
that
queue.
Experience that you actually
but,
go through.
No. Listen, remember one thing. This is what I'm saying. Once you start tumbling the health of the people, and you start tumbling the education, then you are going the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
And what is happening in America, then happening. That's why we have a lot of the gap between rich and poor. And now what you are trying to widening, how do you do it? If you are talking about using the health universal, but you are still doing these things for private, VIP section. It's really a concern.
Yeah.
And I don't think really, I think really they need to think about it, because this is what is happening. This is like an apartheid law.
Yeah. Mm. But constitutionally, it's not constitutional. That's a fact, you know.
Yeah, it is. Because if you remember one thing, that maybe they just remove the color now, because it used to be white only. Now maybe because of a VIP. Now you're about to start a lot.
Now it's about rank, our social
rank
status.
No. We are not supposed to go that way. I'm telling you. That's why I think in the whole world, we are number two.
Yeah.
And those are things we are doing to our own people.
Mm.
We are number two unequal society in the whole world. Maybe we are number one even. Because remember, we are so much in touch with South Africa. We are in touch.
Yeah. And the other thing is this. If you're talking about, maybe you're thinking, okay, this is a pilot. We need to see how this is work. You know, who guaranteed that you will have money actually to get in the second phase?
Exactly. And it's not even supposed to be like that, they try. Yeah. You cannot even try something like that.
Yeah.
No way.
Where we still have a problem, where we have up to now, I'm looking at the other things that I was looking, giving a broader, more understanding of what are the issues that are going on, you know. So what guarantees you that you will have money to go into second phase? Then you would have just built actually VIP, you know, unit in those hospitals. And that's where you went.
And how many of them even are going to attend that when you are... The thing is that when you look at this, and you see there were people who are walking up every day to the clinic, and they are staying in the line, then you check in the VIP, there's not even one who show up for treatment. But that section is still empty. Will the people are piling up.
Actually, that's a good point. Where you have built it up for 294 people, and how many of them they get sick?
Exactly, that's the point.
How many of them they get sick on a monthly basis? So you may have actually a section that has been built. If they are the only one who are allowed to go in, that means it will be closed for 2 or 3 months without.
Oh, yeah, 3 months without any patient coming in.
Any patients coming in.
Yeah. And you still have the other side where the people are. Come on, man. No, man. I think people are advising sometimes they are getting it wrong.
Yeah.
So what I'm always saying is that in that local thing, you have to begin. I'm a star poppy. When you're all of them, I'll begin.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
Thank you, Mega. Let me end up there.
All right, no, thanks for coming through. Yeah.
Sure. Mm.
08-08-08-08-33-66-091. So do come through. There's still about 6 minutes. All right. So if you want to be the very last one. So now we're talking about, I was talking about the cyber security, issues here. I was just talking about how relevant this to you, you know, and I was saying, think about because sometimes when we talk about numbers, we just talk like they are in abstract. You know, how do they relate to us? How do they relate to individual, to ourselves? All right.
Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, morning, Mike.
Morning. How are you?
Good. tell me, this is cyber
vulnerabilities and the incidents that are happening. Yeah.
Those people who are learning the workshop or who are now wanting to telling people what are they really planning for? Because cyber attack is not something that is planned by the software developers. They're the one that is taking advantage on the key protection.
Yeah.
So for you to say we need him to report your PIN, your personal identity number. So it's not you yourself. It's for you to hire somebody that can also having a knowledge of how to protecting your computer or whatever you are doing in the computer.
Mm.
So you don't just learning a workshop like you wanted to telling people that I will teach you how to use AI.
Yeah. But there are like we used to have an FNB, let's say the FNB segment here, that actually telling us, giving us tips and things that we need to do to protect your own unit, to make sure that you. There are things that, you know, you might be exposing yourself without knowing.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the things that is when it pop up and asking you questions like,
yeah.
You wanted to keep a long conversation with the, you wanted to, for example, you wanted to transfer the money, it's asking, are you sure this is the right person that you want to give? Yeah. Those are the things that you need to teach the person that don't try to engage instead of just fill the form. And sign it and sending it back.
Yeah.
So that is another issue. But on the honest story here that you wanted to telling people that you will protect, look at what is happening to 2026. 2016. election when it was leaked by the Russian, those cyber guys.
The one of America.
Yeah, to give you the data. They got the data from Facebook, you understand?
Yeah.
So, and then used it on electoral commission to fill in those forms. So, Michael Zuckerberg, the Facebook guy, was fined because he didn't protect that personal information, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
That is not you yourself to say, I was protecting myself, but I end up voting the party that I were not wanted to vote, you understand?
Yeah.
So those are the things that I'm saying. Sometimes don't fool people instead of tell them the truth that the internet is better for you not to use it at all. Maybe you go to the because if you look at the FNP, it's cutting up from those the line of filling up the or the post what.
But are you saying? Are you saying? You know, of course, there are certain things that you are absolutely on the mercy of the of this cyber, you know, tech. But are you saying there aren't any way that you are able to, you know, to protect yourself for being vulnerable?
No, there is nothing. What is there just to buy the other softwares that are protected to your laptop or your device.
Which is actually still asking you to spend more, you know, the same company.
It's the same thing I'm saying. If you are using FNB and you want to transfer 120,000, don't do it on your personal laptop or computer.
Yeah.
Go to the bank. That's why the banks, they have a desk for that.
Yeah.
You understand?
Mm.
So those are the things that maybe those cyber security guys, I mean cyber agents, those who want to running workshops and telling people like that. But that is a duty for FNB to say that.
Yeah.
Because even FNB have also a virus. That's why people are losing money. Because they have those boys that they are sitting at their desk to access people's information and sending to the criminals. So that's why we are losing money. Not to say that is a cyber security. No. I mean a cyber attack. No, that is not a cyber attack. It's a leaking of information.
So,
when you are running a workshop, maybe you're running a workshop to share information with people. But not to telling people that, you know, this is what you wake up tomorrow, your account is empty. No. This is somebody who leaking my information. If I could have it with my own information, like iPhone, crowd. So there are nothing leaking up to today. It's almost now 15 years running that iCloud, but people are satisfied to have their information, to share their information with the iCloud.
Yeah.
So those are now the things that I don't look at really interesting. Like one guy was approaching me, said, no, we are teaching the AI. I said, the AI is just information that is now.
Yeah.
It was arranged to say that. But if I'm asking something, why are you needing your help?
Yeah, exactly.
So those are the things that I'm saying. People are fooling to getting money for nothing, but the government are not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is also the same story. It's a cyber security, that one. You are telling people you don't have any software that, I have a solution for this. So let us put this on our devices.
Yeah.
That we are not, and look at what even Huawei losing a lot of customer because of they said there is a chip on Huawei that thing are stealing people's information.
Mm.
You understand?
Yeah.
But it works for those who are engineered that it works. People are now run away from that because they know yes, my information is important.
Yeah.
All my personal things, all my savings are there in the device. But if I give now, if I buy this phone, what people are saying, it might end up leaking the information. I'll feed somebody. I'll feed the parents of Nigeria who are doing this love potion thing and then they're stealing the whole information. Right? And then that's what the problem.
Yeah. All right.
What I wanted to say is let us not do sometimes and allowing anything because this is not in our hands.
Yeah. All right.
It's on the end of the software developer. Yeah, sure.
Okay, great, man. Thanks for coming through.
All right. So, and that's actually bring us to the end. Just a quick one, you know, just to end this segment. Namibia is really, from the story, is under attack. One point seven million say by vent and 2.2 million vulnerability recorded by the end of 2025, with only five formally managed. I think, you know, given that, one would say that's a crisis, isn't it? So this is not just according to the article, okay, and according to Mr. Shihama, this is not just a technology problem. It affects your money, you know, your safety, your health, and your daily life. So hacked water treatment plant, it was a story in that could actually poison an entire town, as it's indicated in the article itself. And a cyber attack could actually wipe out, you know, as also as an example in the article itself, a pensioner entire life saving. And what do you do? You know, so no, cybersecurity is a shared responsibility. Government, banks, business, and every single citizen need to wake up and take this seriously before damage becomes irreversible. So, and well, basically, yeah, that's what we have for you this morning. Yeah, let's do this. Let's do this again tomorrow. Let's do this again tomorrow. At the same time, from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, where we bring you another, you know, another topic that worth discussing, or that really headlines that matter to us as citizen of this country. Okay, I'm gonna leave you in the good hands of Tote France, coming up with Kuthamosha, and I wish you a very good. A good week ahead, and for now, from me, have a good day. Until tomorrow, thanks for listening.